Well, summer is here. Well, yesterday summer was here. Today fall has begun. Isn't it nice outside? It's amazing out there after yesterday. Yesterday it was like walking into a sauna, right? But not today. Good day to be outside, good day to go. But summer's here, kids are out of school, we got everybody graduated in the last week, and it's time for some fun. But I want to ask you this. What are you going to be able to say you did at the end of summer? Are you going to say I worked on my tan? Are you going to be able to say I played a little golf? Are you going to be able to say I just avoided the heat and stayed inside? What's it going to be? Because a lot of times that's what we end up with at the end of summer, right? Kids start getting restless because they're ready to go back to school. Amazingly, they think no way right now. But y'all know, I remember when the end of my summers, a lot of times I was ready to go back to school. What if you made summer different this year? What if this year you decided to invest in our young people? We have opportunities coming up throughout the summer to get involved with the young people in our church. You know, sometimes they say churches, we talk about money a lot. And we talk about money because Jesus talked about money. But, you know, financial stewardship is an important thing. But you know what's just as important is how we steward the blessings that God has given us in his word. And there's nothing greater. Can you imagine if we as a church decided we were going to take all the things, adults and high schoolers, but we were going to take all the things that God has taught us and give it to somebody else? Can you imagine what our church would be like? We wouldn't have to have financial stewardship sermons once a year because people would already know. But it's the responsibility of all of us to decide if we are going to pass on what we know or not. And it's such an important thing that I think we all need to consider being involved. A couple weeks ago, we did cards, and we asked people if they'd be willing to give up 2 weeks a month to serve in kids' Sunday school or in youth Sunday school. And we have a lot of people that serve in Awana and kids now, and I want to thank every single one of them, but they need help. And when we passed out the cards 2 weeks ago and I spoke in both services, I want to thank the 3 people out of our entire church that said yes. 3 people. I know we can do better than that. I know that we know that our kids matter more than that. And so if you look in your bulletin today, we have a card, and we've pared it down. We had some other things you could check boxes in before, but there's a place in there where you can just check, I'd be willing to work in youth 2 weeks a month, which is Wednesday night or Sunday morning, or I'd be willing to work in kids, which is just Sunday morning during the summer. We don't have Awana during the summer. But if you would be willing to do that and drop it in the bulletin at the end of the service, we need you. We desperately need you. We cannot have the type of next-gen and many-gen ministries that we want without everyone being involved. And if everyone does a little, we can do a lot together because we're better together. And so I just want you to think about that and prayerfully consider that, and please decide to be a part of our next-gen ministries as we go forward. We need you. I know everyone works a hard job. I know everyone has ministries to do. But I'll tell you this, if you'll get involved in kids' ministries and you're doing something else in our church, I'll try to make it work so that you can focus on the kids' ministries. Because that's that important. It's that big a deal. It's that crucial and critical. So I hope I can stand before you next week and say, we had 20, 30 people that checked a box that said they'd be willing to give us 2 weeks a month. We need you. That's all I got to say about that. Grab your Bibles. We're going to be in Revelation 8 today. We're going to be motoring forward, and this is the 7th seal. We started the seals a few weeks ago, and this is the 7th seal judgment, and then which leads into the trumpet judgment. So we're going to cover the first part of them today. But this is where the rubber meets the road in Revelation. This is not a fun section. And in fact, I believe Shelly, are we going to let the kids go out today if they want? Some kids have already gone. Okay, good enough. I was going to tell you, if you want your kids to step out, we're going to be talking about some pretty serious stuff today. So if you've got any little ones that you're just not sure that you're ready to hear, but I'm going to try to be sensitive about it. But there's no way around this message. Just when you get into the judgments and revelations, it's tough. It's tough. And I don't even need to do any adding to the words. You'll get how tough it is. But it's necessary. You know, sometimes I hear people say, Pastor, I wish you would just talk about fun stuff. I wish you'd just make me feel good and let go. And I love to make people feel good. Trust me, there's nothing a pastor wants more than for people to feel encouraged when they go out the door. But you know what will actually make you feel great? Not just being patted on the back and going, hey, Jesus loves you, have a great day. But what will actually make you feel great is when you understand God's word and realize that you are not a child of wrath, but are a child of God because you have placed your faith in him. And so you do not have to be afraid anymore. You do not have to fear. That's what actually makes life awesome. When you aren't worried about eternity, when you aren't worried about what's going to happen to you next, when you can just focus on being the person that God has called you to be, the person that God created you to be, the blessing that God created you to be. Revelation reminds us also why mission matters so much. Because time is short. And one of the main things that we're trying to get across throughout this whole book of Revelation is don't miss the opportunities that you're given. Don't think somebody else is going to witness. That's why I talked to you about kids a minute ago and say, don't think somebody else is going to raise up our kids. Don't just leave it to chance. God has placed you here to do something amazing. God has placed you here to be a blessing to somebody who needs to hear your story, who needs to hear why you are of faith, who needs to hear how you wrestled with coming to know Jesus, who needs to know that, hey, you know what? It took me a long time. Or some people may need to hear, I've been following Jesus since I was little. But it's something that each one of you uniquely is able to share with certain people. Preston, I'm echoing for some reason back there. I don't know what's going on, but anything you can do to help would be awesome. But anyway, but the point is that time is short. Time is critical. Friends, jump into Revelation 8:1 with me. It says, when the Lamb opened the seventh seal. Remember, we did the six ones earlier, so here's the seventh. And this is interesting because in the seal judgments were the four horsemen that dealt with people. And it was sin running amok, and it was God taking his hand off of man's sin and man just taking and running with it and doing great damage to people. And then you get to the seventh seal, and it says, and the Lamb, Jesus, opened up the seventh seal, and there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. Now, as far as we know, this is the longest time that heaven will ever be silent. When you looked up at, when we were back in chapter 5 and we looked up into heaven, there was constant praise going on. It was nonstop. People around the throne, beings around the throne, celestial beings around the throne, and everybody's praising God. But for a half an hour, it goes silent. Have you ever tried to be quiet for half an hour? I know that it's hard for me. Maybe it's hard for you too. I just want to run a little test for you this morning. I want you to hold your hand up when you think it's been 30 seconds. Ready? Go. Seconds. That seemed like a long time. Total silence, not a word. Imagine 30 minutes in a place that is constantly, and you remember we've been looking at the verses, and it always is loud in heaven. There's always a lot going on, and heaven goes silent for 30 minutes. But why the silence? Why does heaven need to go silent for a minute? And there's two main reasons. The first one is anticipation and sorrow for what is about to happen. It's like heaven, it's like everyone in heaven takes a deep breath and goes, because they know what's coming. They know that judgment is coming. And all of heaven takes that moment to just go, man, it's finally here. And there, but when we look at, sometimes I'll talk to people at Revelation, they'll go, man, when I can't wait for God to judge all those people because, man, they're going to get what's coming to them. And that's not the way it is. There's a moment where we understand that it's necessary, but we also understand that it's going to be a terribly sad moment as well. Because there are people that have not chosen for Jesus, so they're going to be out there. And they're going to face that. Part of the reason that mission is so important. But it's also a moment where God pauses, where the Father pauses, and the best way I can explain it, I think it's like a parent who has that moment of when they're just about to have to punish their child, they go, and you know the old parent thing that they say, this is going to hurt me worse than it's going to hurt you, right? Anybody ever said that? Anybody had that said to them? I did. My dad said that to me one time when I was about to get a belt. But, you know, but parents say that, and as a kid you go, it doesn't hurt you at all, it hurts me. But when you have to punish your child, you know, you all of a sudden feel that, and you recognize that it's painful. And I think that's what God is doing here. God is allowing the silence in heaven because he's not looking forward to this moment. But it's necessary because God is about to deal with sin. Verse 2 goes on and it says, and then I saw the seven angels who stand before God and the seven trumpets given to them. And another angel came and stood at the altar with a golden censer, and he was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints and the golden altar before the throne. And the smoke of the incense and the prayers of the saints rose before God and from the hand of the angel. Wait a minute. Talking about prayers of the saints, aren't the prayers, don't you have to be voted in to be a saint? Who are all these saints in heaven? And the truth is, it's a saint in the New Testament. We need to be very clear about this. A saint in the New Testament is a follower of Jesus Christ. There is no religious body that can vote you in to be a saint. It is not people who decide who the saints are. It is Jesus, and you become a saint by faith. And so every single person who is of faith is a saint. And so when they're talking about the saints in heaven offering prayers and the incense goes up, they're talking about you and me if you were a follower of Jesus Christ. You see the incense burning, and the incense is always a symbol in the Bible for one thing. It symbolizes a fragrance, the beauty of prayers going to God and lifted up to heaven when we're on earth. But in heaven, it's still coming to the throne, and we celebrate, and God is thrilled and overjoyed with the prayers of us, those of us who are with him. And it's like a sweet aroma to the Lord, and he enjoys when we talk to him. It's a beautiful thing. These prayers are the cries of the multitudes in heaven, both of the ones who have come out of the tribulation and the ones who are already there. It's us. You know what they're praying for? They're not praying for stuff. You know what they're praying? Jesus told us. We call it the Lord's Prayer. The first thing we pray is, thy will And that's what we're praying for here. That's not the first part of the prayer, but that's the punchline of the prayer. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And so the people are praying out, and they're asking for God to finally deal with sin, against ungodliness, against evil. All of these things are happening. And God now, at this moment, in his perfect timing, finally says, now. And that moment of now is final. That moment of now is instant. And yeah, when heaven goes silent, when that seventh seal is opened, and we always talk about, we don't know when these things are going to happen, but in that moment in heaven, when that seventh seal is open, all of heaven's going to know, 30 minutes, heaven equivalent, it's happening. Here it is. And then you get to it in verse 5. And it said, then the angel took the censer and filled it with fire from the altar and threw it on the earth. And there were peals of thunder and rumblings and flashes of lightning and an earthquake. And we've talked about those things a lot already around the throne and those things. And when you see the thunder and the lightning and the earthquake, they all represent, of course, that God's judgment is coming and that God's power is at hand and it is time. And so God, who had said later, who had wanted all to come to faith, now says, the door's closing. Time is now. I will delay no longer. I'm going to deal with sin, and I'm going to deal with it swiftly and finally. He's going to settle all accounts, and there is no middle ground. And here we go. Trumpets. Trumpets get your attention. Why trumpets? Trumpets are here because all throughout the Old Testament, whenever God was about to do anything, they'd blow the trumpet to announce that something big was about to happen. And that's what's happening, because this is big and there is no middle ground. There's no like, well, I'm a little bit on the world's side, a little bit on God's side. No, I mean, you're either with Jesus or you're with the enemy. There is no variation. There's no just like going, hey, I just want to stay in the middle. You have to choose. Because in that moment, the choice is everything. And the very fact that you are here today tells me that you have either chosen for him or he is calling out to you to choose him. And I'm going to give you an opportunity at the tail end of the sermon to make a choice for Jesus. But first, I want you to see what the alternative is. I want you to see what happens if we choose against him. It's the future of unfaithfulness. Here we go. Revelation 6:8-6. And now the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared to blow them. And the first angel blew his trumpet, and there followed hail and fire mixed with blood, and these were thrown upon the earth. And a third of the earth was burned up, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all of the green grass was burned up. Now some people think, and you'll hear this sometimes, you read books on Revelation, that people think that the grass equals people, the trees equal kings, and the earth equals the whole universe, and all of the history of the universe. But that's not what it is. This is literal. This happens to the earth. And so when they talk about trees, it means trees. When they talk about grass, it means plant life. And the four horsemen, as I said a little while ago, dealt with people, but now God is dealing with the earth. He deals in these first four, he deals with plant life, he deals with oceans, he deals with a fresh water supply, and he deals with the solar system in general. In the first trumpet, a third of the plant life gone. Now, can you imagine what that would do to the oxygen levels of the earth? Gone. Verse 8, the second angel blew his trumpet, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood, and a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Now, you think about it, it doesn't say that a mountain, it says something like a mountain. And what you need to imagine is that, well, let me put it to you this way. There are more than 16,000 asteroids or things flying around that are near Earth orbits that we track. Did you know there's an organization that works for NASA called the Planetary Defense Coordination Office, and they track all of these asteroids. And actually, over the last 10 years, they went from about 10,000 to 16,000 that we have now, because they're getting better at finding them. But one of these days, one of these is going plausibility could enter the atmosphere, come through, and you know what happens when things go through the atmosphere? It burns up with fire. Something big. That it could be something like that. But this trumpet damages food from the sea. Imagine how many nations around the world depend on sea life, fish. But the bigger thing here is the last part. A third of the ships were destroyed. Most people don't know this, but 90% of the world's commerce travels by ocean. If a third of the ships of the sea are gone, That cripples commerce. It cripples the ability to move things around. It cripples the ability to get food places. It cripples world commerce. So God says he's going to deal with that. And then you see in verse 10, a third angel blew his trumpet. So this is the third one. And a great star fell from heaven, blazing like a torch. And it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. Well, that's something else falling out of the sky, yes? But this one's specific. This one has a name, and it says, the name of the star is Wormwood, and a third of the stars became wormwood. I'm sorry, a third of the waters became wormwood, and many people died from the water because it had been made bitter. So some type of body comes out of the sky, comes apart, lands in a third of the freshwater bodies. Now, that's not the ocean. It's talking about freshwater bodies, so it lands on, it ends up on the land, and somehow that goes and messes up a lot of the fresh drinking water. And you go, Pastor Jeff, that's not possible. Really? We've done things like this almost to ourselves. When the nuclear reactor in Russia, Chernobyl, had a partial meltdown, it affected 63,000 square miles around it. That's about the size of Oklahoma or Georgia. We did that. Now, can you imagine if God gets involved? 63,000 square miles, the size of Oklahoma, undrinkable water by something man-made. God can do that. God could just say the word, and he could make it undrinkable, the water. But he wants the world to know that this is judgment, that he told us beforehand how it was going to be. And somehow people are going to know that this is called wormwood, this thing that comes out of the sky. Verse 12 goes on and it says, the fourth angel again blew his trumpet, and a third of the sun was struck, and a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of their light might be darkened, and a third of the day might be kept from shining. Likewise, a third of the night. Have any of you ever worked a night shift? Anybody? Yep, few people have worked night shift. Did you think that was of the devil? Everybody I've ever talked to that did night shift, and they're like, oh, it's so evil. But you know why that we feel that way? Because it's depressing to be out at night all the time, right? And I know sometimes we have to because we work in a company where they work 24 hours a day, and I've run companies that did that, but the people that worked at night, they were always asking, can I get back on the day eventually? And the reason they want to be back on the day is because we want to be in the daytime. When you get nothing but night, it's tough. I mean, think about a gloomy day. Just think about those days where we have like rain for like four straight days, and it's gloomy outside, it's gray, it's dark. Does everybody go, man, I just feel so good today. I feel happier every day that it's gloomy. And the answer is no, of course not. We feel more depressed every day because we're not built, we weren't meant to be in darkness. But what's going to happen here is that God is going to take away the light the third of the day, and so the days are going to be shorter, it's going to be more nighttime. And if you do research about where the people are the most depressed in the world, it's always in countries that have long, long periods of darkness. So countries that are very far north, very far south, that tends to be where you see depression because they live in darkness. But God is going to let people know, darkness is the outcome when you choose against me. Darkness is your future. But God doesn't want that for anybody. God has not relished the idea that this is what has to happen, but people need to understand that this is going to happen if people choose against him. And so God doesn't take away all of the light. He takes away a third of the light. And these things are rough. I get it. But see, with God, there's no darkness. At the end of the book of Revelation, we see that God dwells with his people, and there is no need for a sun or a moon because God is their light. And so we don't ever, we'll live in a situation where we don't ever have darkness in the future. And so it's going to be this amazing time of eternity. But if you choose against him, there's nothing but darkness. It never stops. There is no light. And what God is trying to get across here is that there's no happiness without Jesus. It's only darkness. And I know there may be some people out there that say, well, wait a minute. I get why God is dealing with people. I get the four horsemen because people sinned, but why the earth? And what the Bible teaches us is that the earth is under the same curse that people are because of sin, that all of creation is suffering. Romans 8:9 and 8:19 says this, for the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. See, in eternity, the world isn't going to look like it looks now. There isn't going to be day and night. It's going to be daytime all the time. The world isn't going to look the same. As beautiful as we think it is now, it's going to be more beautiful in eternity because it's going to be without sin, because God is going to create a new heavens and a new earth we see at the end of the book of Revelation. And so he's dealing with this world, and he's not going to reshape this world. He literally is going to create a brand new one. That's what the Bible teaches us. See, this world needs a reboot. And you go, I know, it's not that great right now, but there's still some really good stuff. No, this world needs a reboot. Think about it for a minute. There are people out there, many, many people, who think that animals should have more rights than an unborn baby. That you can get rid of an unborn baby with no consequences, but if you kill an animal, you should go to jail. Now, I'm not advocating, I love animals, so don't get me wrong. Don't mishear me. But that's out of whack. That's out of whack. And it needs to be fixed. I can give you example after example of why this world is upside down right now, but God is going to deal with this world. God is going to set things straight. And God invites you into the place of light, into the place of eternity, to walk with Him, to be with Him. And time is short. Time is short. We have a very small window in our life to do the things that we are supposed to do, that only you were tasked to do. And yes, God could use somebody else, but He tasks you to be a part of it. And so whether it's passing on lessons to our children, whether it's sharing with people that you meet outside, whether it's loving people who do not think they are lovable, whether it's teaching God's word to people in prison, whatever it is, you got to do what God's calling you to do. You got to be a part of what God is doing, because people's lives are at stake. People's lives matter. And we should want everyone possible to be with us. Maybe you're here this morning and you say, I don't know if I'm going to be there. I am thinking about it, but I don't know. Well, this morning I want to give you the chance, while we're singing, choose Jesus. We're going to stand up and sing in a second, and I just want to invite you. I'm going to be sitting down here in the front, and I just want to invite you to come sit down on a chair with me, and I want to talk to you, and I want to pray with you, and ask you to invite Jesus in your heart if you haven't done that.